Hi, my name is Stuart Lee, and I'm a sexless, middle-aged married man and stand-up comedian, and I love Resonance FM. On St. Valentine's Day 2012, Resonance 104.4 FM launched a week-long on-air fundraiser. London's finest radio station needs your help. From February the 14th until February the 19th, Resonance FM will be running an on-air auction of unique, desirable items and novel experiences. Dig deep and help keep Resonance FM on air. Please, it's the only thing I like listening to, really.
This is the Bike Snob of New York City, and you're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance FM 104.4.
That's right, this is The Bike Show with me, Jack Thurston.
And me, Jen Kerrison.
Jen, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you very much, Jack. It's so nice to be back. It's nice to be indoors this week as well, I must say.
Did you have a good time cycling in Oz?
I had the most wonderful time. I was reminded of how hilly Sydney is, but other than that, I had a lovely time. Thank you very much.
And you've got some reporting from your trip for the future, right?
I do, yeah. So much exciting stuff is happening in Sydney, and I'm so happy to bring it all back and tell Londoners about it, because there's lots of good things happening over there.
Right on. Well, I hope you know that it's Valentine's Day tomorrow, Jen.
I do. I'm being constantly reminded by pink things everywhere.
Well, the wise people in the station management here at Resonance FM have decided that Valentine's Day is the beginning of a week-long fundraising marathon in which people can show how much they love the greatest radio station in the world by helping us to stay on air by giving us some money.
I couldn't think of anything more romantic myself.
You liar. Anyway, it's all going on for the next week, and because the bike show's on Monday, we don't really fit in, but I gather that it's already Valentine's Day somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. So we're starting a little bit earlier. And obviously you get there first on a bike anyway. So what is happening is that people are bidding for stuff that is being auctioned by Resonance FM. Things that have been donated to the station. Some amazing things, in fact. And it's worth going and checking out the list once it goes live on the Resonance FM website and tuning in to the radio station to hear more about the items that are up for auction. Of course, you can just give money. You don't have to give money and get something back. But, you know, there may be some extremely valuable artwork that you can get for a good price, as well as making sure that all the money goes to the station. I think last time we did this, there was something made by Tracy Emin that was a unique one-off piece. Bob and Roberta Smith usually have works in, and lots of interesting books, first editions, other artifacts.
But you're right, Jack, you don't have to get something for your money other than this amazing radio station, which is what you would be getting for your money. But I think it would be a good idea for anyone who listens to the bike show to give up their tube money and their TFL money this week, if you ever do catch public transport, and put that money towards Resonance FM and ride your bike non-stop for a whole week without getting on public transport, because it will make us feel good and it will make you feel good.
That's a great idea. I hope there are people, if only for the reason that they'll be able to give us their money, that they can bear to be without the stinking tube of a workday morning. And
we would actually be doing you a favour, actually.
We'll be doing, yeah, exactly. So yeah, you should be paying us, and you will be. You will be paying us. So yeah, cancel your weekly travel card and give the money to Resonance, or just give some money to Resonance. And I have a little inducement in the form of some limited edition signed screen prints done by Richard Mitchelson, who's the graphic designer and illustrator who did the bike show's logo. And they are A3 size, printed on lovely thick archival paper, screen printed in orange and black, and they look really cool. And it doesn't say the bike show in two big letters, so it just does look actually like quite a nice thing.
It is a very lovely image.
It's a nice image. It is not just the logo, it's a sort of a bit different from that. And there aren't that many of them, because they were screen printed and Richard has signed them, and that's it. So if you give, what should we say, tenner?
Yeah, I think that's tenner. A bargain. Okay. That's okay. A bargain at twice the price, Jack.
If you give a tenner and maybe a little bit of money for, what are we going to do about postage? We're going to have to post these out.
Yeah. So
okay, a tenner for the UK people, and
15 if you're abroad.
15 quid if you're abroad, because that'll help cover some postage. So yeah, that's like $20. $20 is less than £15, isn't it? I think so.
Hang on, okay. Let me just go to the foreign exchange in my head.
All right, come on, calling forex. So £10 for the home based listeners. Of course, it could be more than that. Or $20 if you're overseas. And if you say that you would like to receive a bike show print when you make your PayPal donation, because that's the best way to make a donation. You can find out how to do that on the Resonance FM website, www.resonancefm.com. If you do it that way with a PayPal and a gift, and then just say, I'd like the bike show print, and then the first 20, I think we've got about 20 of them left, first 20 people to donate in excess of £10 for UK people and $20 for the rest of the world. And I guess that's, what's that, 15 euros. It's already sounding really complicated, but I'll put it on the website so you can read exactly what it's about. But we obviously, your money is what keeps this station going. The station does get a little bit of Arts Council funding and some foundation money, but without listener donations, the station would cease to exist.
And that would possibly mean no more bike show, which would be a tragedy. So let's get some money rolling in, please.
Yeah, please, please. Thank you. On with the show.
Hi, I'm Graham Aubrey. You're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance FM. Oh, do you want to let Marks and Spencer's go? You're listening to... You're listening to Resonance FM. Because you're with it. Because you're with it. No, I've done it too far now. Taking it too far. That's not me. Imagine me what I'm like when I drink beer.
The first love of my life was not a girl, it was my very first bike. Bridgeford Park, 1985, with my dad's hand on my back. The joy of summer, no stabilizers, sweat gathering on my brow. I am flying, I am street hawk, nothing's gonna stop me. Sat in public transport, hoping and wishing for the day that I'd be on my bike again. Back in the helmet when the
Tell me, Jen, what do you think of Waterloo Bridge roundabout on the south side, the one at the south side of Waterloo Bridge, just by where the IMAX theatre is?
Jack, I think it's scary. I've approached it from all different angles, and fairly often, actually, I'm often heading down that way for the pictures and whatnot, and it's scary. I still do it, and I still do it on the road, but every time I do, I tell myself next time I won't.
Well, would you believe it that in 2004, this junction was remade?
Really?
Supposedly.
That recently?
For the benefit of cyclists. It was remade to be a better junction in 2004. And in one of the very early editions of the bike show, I decided that I'd go and give it a review.
There's a funny little green cycle lane to my left here. One cyclist on a Brompton has just ignored that. I'm going to take it. A lot of broken glass and litter and leaves in here. I guess they probably don't clean it very much. Now, I'm back in with the buses. Three buses on my left here. Coming up to the traffic light, where it's all a bit confusing. I've got a green light. So has the bus. It's a race between us. Oh, now it's going red. I made it. The bus has run the red light. Now there's traffic to my left. BMW looking like he's nosing his way out. Okay, but I'm through. Catching up with the Brompton. A taxi coming up behind me. And now I re-enter the traffic on the bridge. It's quite a steep slope. And there's a bus stop right ahead with two buses waiting there. So I'm going to have to either wait behind them or pull out to pass. Oh, as they're indicating, so they're pulling out. Fantastic. Oh, it's a competition. No, I was there first, mate. Woo! Well, that was exciting. So what do you think of the Waterloo roundabout?
I think it's quite chaotic. It's quite dangerous still. Even they did it new, you know. It's still from that side. The cars have to wait and you have to rush quickly to cross the road. But otherwise, they made a new traffic light, so it's a little bit better.
So what do you think are the biggest dangers?
Big lorries, you know, big cars, the buses as well. It's really confusing. They suddenly appear and, yeah, you just have to be careful, really.
Where are you from?
Czech Republic.
And how is cycling in the Czech Republic?
Oh, so no car on the road. It's much easier, but London is okay. If you know how to cycle, I mean, you just have to be careful, but yeah. You have to be quite fast, otherwise the traffic is gonna eat you alive. Yeah.
Well, a seasoned rider, for me, it's okay. But for a beginner, it's a lot of problems because you've got a lot of turn-offs. You've got no actual green lane to take the bikes around, you know what I mean? So we're fighting with the traffic and there's so many turn-offs, you know what I mean? So if you're not aware of what you're doing, it can be dangerous.
And what could they do to make it better?
Well, I think we need to have a green line all the way around. I mean, obviously we can't go underneath because there's pedestrians. I can't figure out because we've got a big London Max Centre. We can't go through it. That would be the ideal, to have a green strip coming through right through. But we'd have to get a green strip all the way around. You know what I mean? And when the lights are off, we have a right of way before cars. You know, so if we have a couple of seconds before the cars, bicycles go first and then cars, then we can get out of the cars' ways and make ourselves free.
And do you think they've made it better or worse with the changes that they made in the last 6 months?
This actual place, there's nothing for us on here. This actual roundabout is not for bicycles.
Well, I've just happened to come upon Tom Lynch cycling up Waterloo Bridge, who's the cycling coordinator for the London Ambulance Service. Okay. Tom, what's your view of the Waterloo roundabout?
On a daily basis, my riders and myself try and negotiate this roundabout. It's almost like taxi versus bicycle, bus versus taxi versus bicycle. But the main thing is, buses are coming straight into the lane and obviously not seeing us, and it's a daily argument. So at some point, something is going to happen. We've issued warnings to several different organisations, as well as Transport for London. Someone is going to have a serious accident there. I've informed my riders not to take the cycle path because it puts you in such a vulnerable position that you will get run over.
That's the cycle path that goes to the left on its own.
Goes to the left on its own, but then when you go with the flow of traffic, you're against the oncoming vehicles from the right and also the buses on your left. So
your recommendation is?
Not to take the cycle path. I don't know what happened in the negotiation stage, but that's not right there. That has to be re-looked at.
Well, that was Vintage Bike Show from 2004 and the review of the then new Waterloo Bridge Junction on the south side of Waterloo Bridge. And the reason I played that is because that is one of 500 junctions that have been earmarked to be reviewed by the Mayor of London.
Not a great report, is it?
It's not very good that they made it in 2004 and now they're having to review it again after we obviously discovered that it was totally disastrous back in 2004. And it's taken 7.5 years for the mayor to say, oh, you're right, we're going to sort this one out. And it's one of a number of junctions, as I said, about 500, but it's one of the first tranche of junctions that's going to be reviewed. And I think it's as a result of all this campaigning by The Times and the London Cycling Campaign and others to say, you know, get a grip.
I guess, Jack, one would be forgiven for worrying that, in fact, even if they do it again, that it's not going to be right yet again. So how many incarnations are there going to have to be of intersections in London before we get them right?
I don't know. Yeah. Waterloo Bridge roundabout version 3.0. We'll look forward to it. Okay. Well, let's move on to more enjoyable cycling. Cycling, in fact, from one side of Europe to another. And it's a great pleasure to welcome to the studio, to the bike show, Andrew Sykes. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you.
Just get yourself in front of the microphone a bit better. There you go. That's great. You have cycled across Europe and written a book about it.
Yeah, I completed the cycle in summer 2010, and then earlier this year I wrote the book, and it's been published since late summer of last year.
And so let's talk a little bit about what made you want to ride across Europe. Are you a keen cyclist, that terrible phrase?
I am a keen cyclist. I gave my car quite a few years ago now, so I do cycle every day, although until relatively recently, I'd never done any kind of long-distance cycling. And the original inspiration for doing this particular ride was nearly 4 years ago when I was watching the Olympics in Beijing. I think it was the first day of the Olympics, and I was watching Nicole Cook at the Great Wall of China. It was very, very wet at the time, and I was sitting on my sofa thinking, then I need to do something a bit more adventurous than waste my summer holidays as a teacher, 6 weeks just watching other people having adventures on the TV. So I thought, what can I do? And I thought, well, why don't I cycle somewhere interesting? I have a friend, a fellow languages teacher who works in the south of Italy, or who lives now in the south of Italy. I thought, well, why don't I cycle to see him in Puglia? And 2 years later, that's exactly what I did.
So Puglia, that's the heel of Italy.
Yeah, it is. It's right in the south of Italy, a very beautiful area. If anybody fancies a good holiday down there, I would certainly recommend it. I went there about 5 years ago for the first time. I've never been to Greece, but it is how I expect, or how I imagine, Greece would be, with whitewashed buildings, very beautiful countryside, olive groves everywhere, a very beautiful part of the world.
So, Andrew, it does sound beautiful, and you do recommend that people go there. Let's talk about getting there. Would you recommend people take it by bike?
Well, there are clearly easier ways of getting there rather than bike, but there are... probably few more enjoyable ways of getting there. I set off nearly, it was the very end of the term, so I took a few extra days from school off work, and I set off, I think it was the 18th of July, and 6 weeks later, five, 6 weeks later, I arrived in Puglia. I made my way south through England, through Kent, down through the northeast of France, down the Rhine, across Switzerland, over the Alps, and then down through the Italian peninsula, all the way to Puglia.
Brilliant. And you followed something called Eurovelo 5. Could you tell us about the Eurovelo network?
I knew nothing about it until I actually went and found it. It was set up by the European Cyclists Federation, and there are some, I think there are now 15 routes in total. Some routes are better known than others. For example, there's route number 6, which goes along the Loire Valley and then heads off into Eastern Europe. There's a whole infrastructure that's built up around that route, and many hundreds, probably many thousands of people every year cycle that route. Some of the other routes, the Eurovelo 5, I think, are a bit less well known, and that was the one that I'd chosen to cycle, and I found out very, very quickly, really, there wasn't that much information out there, so I then started to make it up really for myself.
So it's one of those things, like many cycle routes in this country, that looks very good on the map with a nice coloured line, but when you actually come to the ground, there's not much there.
Yeah. I think initially when I came up with the idea, I wanted to go into the internet, type in cycling from London to Rome and beyond, and for somebody to have mapped out my entire route. That never happened. People have done parts of it. There are bits where you can piggyback upon other cycle networks. For example, Switzerland is the best example, where the route itself takes the Swiss National Route 3 from the north of the country through until you get to the Italian border. So that was helpful. But at the end of the journey, I think I was actually quite glad that I didn't have a route map to follow, because it made the whole experience far more enjoyable.
You can make it up a little bit as you go along and say, oh, I'll go that way, that looks interesting, or talk to people along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't feel in the least bit constrained by any road map or any route that anybody had written previously.
So you got your bike. How are you planning to spend the nights? Were you camping or staying in hotels or both?
Well, I took a tent with me. I'd set up a website, and via the website, a few people had been in contact along the route. I didn't really have much planned before I set off. Certainly, the route wasn't very planned. I did, however, know quite a few people who'd either contacted me through the website or people I knew already who lived in that area of Europe. And so it was good to visit them and to stay with them for a few days. A lot of it, like I said earlier, was just making it up as I went along. I didn't have accommodation booked. It was a case of finding campsites, occasionally the odd cheap hotel in some of the big cities.
And Andrew, did you say that you did spend some days in the one place? You weren't riding continually for the whole 6 weeks?
No, I took a few days off. As I say, I'm not a professional cyclist. For me, it was a holiday. It was an interesting way of spending the 6 weeks of holiday that I had. So it would have been, I think, a mistake to treat it as just one long cycle journey. It was me as a tourist travelling through Europe. So yes, there were certainly, I think, 5 days in total where I didn't cycle at all. Most of those were by design. For example, when I got to Luxembourg, I wanted to spend some time there because I'd never been there before. Also, when I was in Italy, people had recommended that I spend some time in Lucca, which I'd never visited, so that was another day off. Some of them, however, the weather in Northern Europe especially was pretty bloody awful, and some of the days, really, I took off simply because I needed to dry out.
You've got this new weather phenomenon that we have, the Northern European summer monsoon season. For the last few years, August has been an absolute washout.
Well, I was told I was told by the Swiss when I was cycling through Switzerland that it was the worst record, sorry, the worst winter that they could remember. Now, whether that was true or not, perhaps they were just trying to placate me, I'm not sure, but it was very wet, and there were some days. Probably the low point was when I arrived in Lucerne, where it was just, you know, a very beautiful Swiss town on the shores of a beautiful lake with the Alps in the distance, completely ruined by the fact that it rained continuously for 36 hours while I was there. So that was the low point, but fortunately it was only one low point amongst many, many more positive moments.
What's the best thing about making a journey like this by bike, in your experience?
Well, certainly the people that I've met. Although I met some friends, I met a friend who I used to work with in Strasbourg, and I met my friends in southern Italy. It was, for me, the high points were when I met these people who'd be in contact with me through the website. There's a guy called Alan in Boulogne. When I arrived in Italy, there was a chap called Simone in Pavia, and then further south in Rome, and also in Benevento and in the south. And to spend 24 hours, 48 hours with those people, living life as not as a tourist, but with them, staying in their houses, in their flats, going out for meals with them in the evening, that was probably the high point of the whole thing.
What do you think made them, you know, reach out to you if they didn't know you from Adam?
Good question. I don't know. There was nothing. I think I make it very clear in the book that, you know, that they invested a lot of faith in me. I could have been anybody. I could have been goodness knows what, but you know, they had the faith in me.
You know, this universal community of cyclists. We ride bikes because we want to make contact with people, you know.
I think it's intrinsically interest in what we do. One of the things that I was concerned about before I did the cycle was how lonely I'd be. As I said, I'd never done any long distance cycling before. I was conscious of the fact that, you know, I might get to Dover and might think, well, I haven't spoken to anybody in 2 days, 3 days. This is not for me. I want to go back home. And so the summer prior to the trip, I did take my bike up to Berwick-upon-Tweed and cycle all the way down what's called the Pennine Cycleway, just as kind of a tryout. And you know, I couldn't move for people. There were people asking me where I was going, why I was on a bike, what I was doing. You know, I couldn't have. Certainly wasn't lonely on that route, and that gave me the confidence to then do a similar kind of thing across Europe. And again, there were very, very few moments. In fact, I can't remember any offhand where I felt. You know, I really do need somebody to speak to here.
I'm getting very itchy feet listening to this. Yeah. So I'm really keen for a ride now.
You're a teacher, and you teach modern languages.
I do,
so
yeah.
Did you have the languages of the countries that you cycled through that helped you?
Well, I teach French, and I sort of obviously through France and my odd excursions into Belgium, that was fine. And the problem came when I went to Switzerland. I was cycling through Swiss, German speaking Switzerland. I don't speak a word of German, and I think probably one difficulty that as a language teacher and probably as a speaker of another language, I think it must be common amongst people who do speak other languages, there is a frustration when you go to a country where you don't speak the language and you're so used to communicating with people in a very similar way to how you communicate with people back at home.
Yeah.
So it can be quite frustrating. And yeah, I go into a kind of English idiot mode trying to come up with a few sentences in German. But as I try to encourage the kids at school, you know, the thing you've got to do is have a go. And then in Italy, it was a little bit easier because I did speak a few words of Italian.
So, Andrew, you did have the outlet of blogging along the way, didn't you? So you had your English expression through your blog.
Yeah.
Tell us about the blog and the book.
Well, yes, I think it's worth pointing out that the book is not the blog. I was very conscious when I'd finished the cycle I think is a bit of a cliche for people to turn a blog into a book. And, you know, many people have done it successfully. But I think I didn't want to just print off the blog that I'd written. I wanted to, when it came to writing the book, I wanted to review what I'd done. There was a six-month gap between me actually finishing the journey and... somebody said to me then, well, you should write a book about this. And I thought, no, I'm a teacher, for goodness sake, I don't write books. Somebody said the same thing at Easter last year, and I thought, well, I'll have a go. And I revisited the blog, and I tried to rewrite it in, with that 6 months of hindsight. And it was a fascinating experience reliving and researching some of the elements of the trip that, quite frankly, I didn't have the time to do when I was cycling through this particular place or wherever. It is not just a book about cycling, it's a book about travelling to the various places I went to. There's history in there, there's culture in there. Hopefully there's something about the people I visited, about the life that really I experienced for those 6 weeks, not just about cycling from one place to the next.
Do you want to read us a passage from it?
Well, yes, the bit that I've chosen is, I've made it over the Alps. I've passed over the St. Gotthard Pass, which was probably the physical high point as well as the emotional high point of the journey. And I've just decided to come back down the other side of the Alps. I'm in Italian-speaking Switzerland. There are two routes that I could have taken. I could have taken the fast route with all the cars and goodness knows what, the lorries. But I chose to take the cobbled route, which was a lot slower, a lot quieter, and obviously was very tempting simply because it was all switchback roads. So here goes. After about 10 minutes on the cobbles, I heard a hard, loud click. I looked around at the bike, but I couldn't see anything wrong, so I continued. But something was badly amiss. Reggie felt out of sorts. He had suddenly become floppy to cycle upon. I stopped again, got off the bike and investigated. One of the spokes on the rear wheel had broken. Damn, this was serious. I could change a punctured inner tube, perhaps even repair a snap chain, but repairing a spoke at 2,000 metres was in the Premier League of mechanical abilities. I wasn't. Worse than just the spoke, the entire back wheel had taken on a very large wobble. Near the top of a mountain, without the necessary technical skills, or indeed the equipment to help myself, I was in big trouble. But stopping wasn't an option, so I tentatively continued to cycle along the switchback roads. Most were still cobbled, so goodness knows what new damage I was inflicting on poor Reggie. Far below me in the valley I could see the small town of Airolo. I could only pray that there was a bike repair shop in town. At times I got off and pushed. On better quality stretchers, I dared to ride. Conscious of the time, it was already mid-afternoon. Eventually, I arrived in Airolo. It didn't look like the kind of place that would have a bike shop. Lots of restaurants and bars, but very few places of practical use, unless you're either hungry or thirsty. In my very best Italian, as I was now in Ticino, I stopped to ask for some advice from a passing local. Un problema con la mia bicicletta. Posso mi dire se c'è un negozio per reparare? He must have been impressed with my linguistic skills, as he replied in a torrent of Italian, of which I caught the most important bit, which, roughly translated, was along the lines of, go down there, mate, there are lots of bars and restaurants. Perhaps he had mistaken my urgent requirement after all. Language issues aside, I did follow his suggestion, but in my mind were images of having to take the bike on a train to Milan to get it repaired. In such circumstances, would I be sufficiently committed to the Eurovelo 5 cause to return to Airolo and continue my route from there? My mind was not made up. Needless to say, there was no bike shop to be found. After such an emotional peak just a few hours earlier, I was now beginning to plumb the depths of an emotional trough.
Well, thank you very much, Andrew. Thanks for coming and talking about the book. It is called Good Vibrations, Crossing Europe on a Bike Called Reggie.
Could I just mention two events that are coming up?
Very quickly, please. Yeah,
this Wednesday, Blue Door Cycles in Crystal Palace, and then on the 29th of March in Fitzrovia, the London Cycling Book Club are going to be discussing it, and I'll be at both events, so please come along if you're interested.
I'll put links to those on the Bike Show's website.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming in. Thanks, Jen. In the last minute... of the show today, I do want to
return to more somber subjects than cycling across Europe. And you may know already that on the 3rd of February, Henry Warwick, a London bike messenger, was killed while working in a collision with a coach on Bishopsgate in the City of London. Henry was the ninth London bike messenger known to have been killed while working, and he'd been working as a messenger for 20 years. Last Friday evening, a memorial ride was held for Henry. I didn't know Henry, though looking at his photograph on the web after his death, I realised that I had seen him many times over the years riding around town. And by all accounts, he was a much loved man who is sorely missed by his family and friends. So I'd like to add the voice of the bike show to those remembering Henry Warwick and expressing my deep condolences to those he leaves behind. I gather he was a Stones man, so this goes out in his memory. Until next week on the bike show, keep warm and stay safe.
Let's drink to the hard-working people. Let's drink to the lonely of birth. Raise your glass to the good and the evil. Let's drink to the salt of the earth. Say a prayer for the common foot soldier. Spare a thought for his backbreaking work. Say a prayer for his wife and his children. Burn the fires and who still till the earth. When I search a faceless crowd, a swirling mass of gray and black and white, they don't look real to me. In fact, they look so strange. Raise your glass to the hard-working people. Don't look real to me. Oh, don't they?